7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 45 of Color of Magic, the gaming podcast where we try to give some people and issues some ear time that don't really get it otherwise. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and I've got my friend here in tow, Brian Allen. How are you doing this week, dude?
We're good. We're coming back like Jordan, wearing the 4-5.
Yeah, I forgot you did wear that for a while. That's kind of funny. That's a good reference. I totally forgot about that one. So yeah, we have a few good things to cover this week. This is going to be a fun show. It's one of those weeks where there wasn't any crazy big news, but just a lot of like interesting news to talk about. So we can definitely get into that. But first, want to remind people that if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/colorofmagic. And we do occasionally post some stuff that's exclusive just for our patrons there. We do send everybody a postcard that subscribes, and that's really nice. It's fun to do. Just a small way for us to connect with the people who support us and follow us. And if you're at one of the higher tiers, I do have some stuff I'm working on that very soon we're going to be sending out some things once they are done. I just got some pieces complete, so can't talk about them yet, but hopefully here in the next couple weeks, we'll be able to unveil some things for our patrons. And we also want to tell everybody about our show sponsor, Cardsphere.com. A great website where you can buy and sell cards in a pretty unique way. You go in, you want to sell cards, you put the price you want to sell them at. If you want to buy cards, you put the price you want to buy them at. And then it just pairs you up. And it's awesome. It takes so much. Matter of fact, I just sent some cards out last week. Let me double check here. And I already got paid on, well, actually two of them. I just refreshed and one of them got updated. So there you go. So I sent some stuff out on the 15th, I think it was. And then stuff started already being received by the buyers. Money got released. So now I've got extra money in my account. It's that simple. And because they just recently added PayPal as an option, you can now just withdraw money right into your PayPal account. So it's super convenient. And they're good people over there. So check them out. They're big supporters of everything we do. So for sure, go give them a look. Now, this week, I want to hop in on the soapbox and kind of want to talk a little bit about how people view competitive content they get from content creators. And I know, this is going to upset some people. And we'll see. I think there's going to be people on both sides of this one. But being real, there are people I've seen, and I've seen it in other people's, this is mostly on YouTube. I'm sure it happens elsewhere, but the couple of examples I have from this past week are on YouTube. In other people's comments section on their videos, a couple on mine, where they see somebody play a video or play a deck, and then they assume they're magically going to go win with it, and then they're pissed off if they don't go undefeated. And here's what's crazy, right? You'll see people post like, oh, I played this deck today and I made it to Diamond for the first time, or I made it to Mythic for the first time, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, great. I'm glad my content's helping somebody. Fantastic. Then there'll be a person who's just like, I don't know what everybody's talking about. I tried this at Diamond. I couldn't get a single win. Like, this is terrible. I'm like, well, for you, maybe. Like, here's the thing. Like, anybody who posts up a deck, whether I'll use myself as this example, right? Whether I post up something that goes 7-0, 5-2, 3-4, doesn't matter ultimately, because that could be about maybe the deck quality. Because even in my videos, I start out with one version, the downloadable version is different, and I tell you at the end of the video the changes that I'm making and why, right? So we learn some things. So the video may not even be representative of what happens at the end. You've got different play skills. That's a big difference, right? We got to be real. Some people are just better Magic players than the others. You also have matchups that are an issue, right? If you get paired up of your 7 matches, you get paired up 4 times or 5 times with one of the bad matchups, well, then, yeah, your win percentage is going to be terrible. I could also go 3-4, and then you get paired against the best matchup 5 times, and maybe you're 6-1 or something. Right? Like, there's no guarantee on any of that. But the fact that there are people out there just watching Magic videos, trying to find the deck that's going to solve all their problems, and then when it doesn't, they're mad about it. It's like, dude, you got to get a grip on reality. That's just not the way it works. And don't get me wrong, like, I do fairly well playing on the ladder. Several of my decks do well. Great. But some of them, I'm even openly saying, we're just experimenting here and seeing if this is even worth the damn at all. And sometimes I'm surprised by the deck. Sometimes they're better than I thought. Great. Experiment works. Other times I'm like, 3-4. Like, yeah, this experiment didn't work out too well. So I'm just saying, like, it's something I've seen popping up. And truthfully, here's the thing that's going to sound real bad, but I'm just going to put this out there. Like, in all reality, most content creators aren't going to care. I mean, it sounds bad. Now, let's say if they put up multiple decks and nobody's winning with any of them and it's a bunch of negative feedback, then yeah, then they'll start caring because they'll just start wondering about their process and what's going on, right? Which they should. But one random person just being mad they're not winning with the deck or whatever and you want to badmouth them and their video and everything else, like when their channel's growing and they've got a bunch of supporters and other people are praising them, like maybe you got to check yourself first sometimes.
It's going in Dunning-Kruger effect, I believe it's called, or people just assume they're awesome.
Yeah.
They can't be the problem.
True. That's fair. I mean, but the reality is, sometimes it is a you problem. So just check it sometimes. Like, I'm good with it. I'm to the point, I just kind of, if I see one of those comments, I just largely ignore it. I still leave it there. I don't delete it or anything. But I just, you know, it's there.
One thing I've noticed with the ladder, not just in Magic, but in multiple competitive games that I play, is okay, you have to have, before you start, you probably want to play some kind of limit on the number of games you're going to try to play that day. Because how long is the World Series? 7 games. Or the Super Bowl? It's 1 game. How many games of Magic do you think you're going to win today? People will get on there, I'm just going to win 30. It's just right at the top. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah, you are. You're going to see a small sample size. Right? Because I'm not going to put up a 3-hour video of me playing 20 matches or something.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. So I put up somewhere between 5 and 8, depending on how long the games are or whatever, 45 minutes to an hour video, and that's what you get.
Let's say your win rate with a certain deck you figured out is around 52-53%. You can climb like that. You just got to say, okay, how many games are playing today? You got to have and stick to it. Because, yeah, you try to play 40 games and burn yourself out. Yeah, you're going to burn yourself out and bottom out at some point.
Yeah, you're right. Some of that is a volume game too, right? If you're at even 51%, if you play enough games, you will make Mythic. I mean, that's just the way math works. But, you know, some people think they're supposed to get there faster or not, whatever. Yeah. That's a whole different thing. The only other thing I would probably add to that is we talked about it a little bit, I think 2 weeks ago, is when people go into Twitch streams or YouTube comments and just want to point out, like, well, you missed lethal here. Like, chat lethal is always a thing. Like, I've watched it. I've seen it when we're doing commentary. I've seen it watching people's streams. Like, chat always believes there was lethal even when there wasn't.
Yep.
Like, this week alone, I had a couple of people be like, oh, you could have done this and there was lethal there and you missed it. And I'm like, no, my opponent still had 3 or 4 cards in hand, has 2 mana open. We know the most popular removal spells are in black. They're 2 mana. They could have easily had them. I was taking the safe road to try to win the next turn and not gambling and putting myself in a worse position. Like, could I have gone for lethal? Sure. Was it guaranteed lethal? No. Like, you know, so it's like, come on, y'all.
It's like, all right, you start your stream, you go play in XYZ tournament and you show us how you do.
Yeah. And the truth is, like, when it's on like today's video, then at least we can have a little bit of a conversation, especially if it's like a question, right? If somebody says, well, hey, it looked like you could have done this and I noticed you did this instead. Was there a particular reason? Okay, cool. Now we can have that conversation. But when you're just like, you should have done this and this was blah, blah. And it's just like, no, like there's logic to it. You know, let's have a real conversation. Or if there's like a cool creative thing that could have won that maybe I missed, I'm like, cool, let's have that conversation. But the ones like when you see people posting on stuff from like 2 or 3 weeks ago and blah, 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 it's like, it's just more time nobody's really going to care about. But that's that whole thing we talked about is like, you got to think before you post. But yeah, the biggest thing is don't be expecting any of us as content creators to just give you a silver bullet. Because the other reality is too, especially the bigger creators, they also have another 10,000 people that have watched that video. So even if it was a silver bullet, it's not going to be one for very long, maybe not even through the end of the day, if it's really a truly is, because everybody's going to copy it and start adjusting to it. That's just the rate at which information moves right now. But anyway, with that said, Brian, what did you learn last week?
So yeah, I was playing with a historic dinosaur deck. I hit Galta. I'm thinking like, oh, well, okay. You know, I've got Galta on. I think we're turn 4 or 5. I'm feeling good about myself. Then my opponent drops Ulamog on their next turn. Like, oh, wait, that's better. That's technically way better than the cool thing I think I just did. But, you know, I looked at the board, realized I could actually let Ulamog swing a couple of times and still, ordinarily I would just concede it immediately. Was it Eldrazi? Okay, you got me. Actually played it out and realized he didn't have anything else that could stop most of my creatures. Actually pulled it out. I was kind of proud of myself.
So they were just all in on Ulamog then?
Yeah. Because you know how, you know, Arena works. Usually you play the big indestructible thing. People will often concede right there. I almost did.
True. I usually at least try to like make them show me that it's going to kill me. But I know it's interesting you said that, though, because to me, that's kind of been representative of my experience playing Historic, that each side's just doing whatever the big thing is they do. And then it's a matter of like, does my opponent have an answer to my big thing or not? And then if the answer is no, you win. If it is, okay, now we get to play a real game of Magic.
Yep. When I had, you know, when I had Oko and had no idea what I was doing, especially because I was just getting back into Magic after being out for probably about a year or so, it had opponents only played it out. They would have had, they had no idea how bad I was. They just saw Oko like, I'm out.
Well, yeah. I get it, though. That would make some people just upset.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I don't know. I think Historic has a lot of fun cards, but I would not be surprised if we see Historic get like a, man, I don't know. Like my list is too big. If it was me, it'd be like a 20 to 25 card banning at this point.
Oh, wow.
Realistically, they could probably do like 8 to 10 and get it to a pretty comfortable place.
And we discussed, I believe last week, Muxus is not on your list for things to ban right now.
He is not on my list.
That's Muxus, a controversial pick again. But
true. My thing is though, it's the enablers to Muxus that I would get rid of. Not Muxus, because Muxus as a card is pretty cool. Like it does a big flashy thing. There's some fun stuff you can do, but it's when you're able to do it on like turn 3, it just gets kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Like you can literally end the game on turn 3 with the perfect draw. You can end it on turn 4 a few different ways.
Yeah. With the average draw ends it on turn 4.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem. Like that's the stuff I would clean up about the format. Like you gotta, like why people ask like, well, why am I enjoying Standard over Historic? Is like, because I'm playing interactive Magic games. Like I'm playing some stuff. There's some spot removal. Maybe I play a couple of creatures. They have an extinction event. You know, they get a Nissa, make a land into a token. I kill that. I attack into their Nissa. You know, there's a bunch of back and forth going on. Even though like I don't really enjoy the Sultai deck playing against it so much, like it's at least interactive Magic and things are happening. It's not just, all right, I'm gonna ignore my opponent for 3 or 4 turns and then just try to do my big thing, because that's what it feels like a lot of times when I'm playing Historic. Even when I was playing like the elf deck, it's like, okay, I'm gonna make an elf, make a bunch of mana, do I get to Craterhoof and win? Yeah, just like, just ignored it. Literally even against goblins, I'm like, okay, well, which one of us hits our big thing on turn 4 or turn 5? Like, that's really it. So, not the biggest fan. Some people are loving it, though. Don't get me wrong. people are making a ton of content. I see a lot of videos. I see people talking about it positively. There are a lot of people that love it. So it's very possible that I'm just in a different minority and just accepting it. And that's okay. Like, we have plenty of other stuff to talk about as far as formats later in the show anyway. As far as what did I learn last week? Just a couple days ago, I discovered that the unwritten rules of baseball are still dumb. For those of you who don't know, there's a guy named Fernando Tatis. Junior, actually, because his father actually played baseball as well. So this is a guy who's grown up around the sport. You know, seen it his whole life, I'm assuming. He was in a situation where his team was up, I believe, 7 runs in the 8th inning. He was at a 3-0 count, which basically means 3 balls, no strikes. He decided to swing at a pitch with the bases loaded, mind you. Ends up hitting a home run, grand slam, whatever, score another 4 runs, right? And this also gives him the home run lead, mind you. The next day, we find out he apparently got reprimanded from one of his coaches for even swinging at the pitch. Because he shouldn't have swung at it, just taking the walk for that 4th ball to get him on base and walk a run in. And they were already up 7. Now, to me, the problem I have there, there's a few. One is that we've seen people lose, or teams lose, 7-run leads.
Absolutely.
So that's the first thing. The second
is, I'm a Cub fan. That's, you know, back before they got good here recently, that was every Tuesday.
Sure. The other issue is, this is the Padres. They ain't been good in 20 years. So also if you can get any excitement, you should probably take it. Like, even if I was the coach that told them not to swing at the pitch, you know, I gave them the sign not to swing, I'd just shut up and take the W the next day. Like, give you, as hell, baseball as a whole, with all these COVID problems and everything else, at least give yourself something positive to talk about in the sport. Now you have a bunch of people talking about how dumb it is that they were trying to tell them not to swing at it.
This is,
and the, oh, go ahead.
This is why it's hard to get, I say this as a baseball fan, this is why it's hard for baseball to get new fans because of dumb things like this.
Oh, I agree. Totally. Totally. So the other problem is that you're talking about a guy who's right now one of the few positive things for baseball to talk about. He was basically tied for the home run lead. So this is going to give him the lead now. And you know, they all get incentives for home runs, grand slams, blah, blah, whatever. Like, so like, even if he swings and misses, like, worst case scenario, he's still got 2 more pitches coming.
And I don't know. Did he have a career grand slam before this? I don't know, because he's a relatively young player. So he might have
done one before this. Yeah, I don't know if he did or not.
Because there are people that play their entire career. I mean, people that are good at hitting home runs that never get a grand slam because just everything has to happen perfectly.
Yeah. So I just don't understand. Like, I really don't. And I don't even care if it's like, well, you know, you're already up. You just take the walk and let the next guy come up and they walk the batter. Like, no, if you're going to put one up, that's the pitcher's problem. You're talking about 2 grown-ass men. They probably get paid $1 million to get out and play baseball. Whatever. Like, let your team be down 15 points in the 4th quarter of an NBA game with, like, I don't know, 30 seconds left. And you just toss up a junkie shot in front of, like, Anthony Davis or something. Like, you're damn right he's going to block it. Let a DB be deep when, I don't know, the Patriots are down 3 touchdowns with 20 seconds left. That DB is still going to try to intercept the ball.
Belichick would run the ball over his own grandma. We all know this. We've seen.
Yeah. Hell, there was a game with the Colts and the Steelers probably about 5 or 6 years back, maybe now, where the Colts were just getting blown out. I mean, it was like 35-10 or something with something small, like maybe 30, 40 seconds left in the game. They punted and they had Antonio Brown, like an all-pro receiver, back there to return the kick, and he ran it back for a touchdown. So whatever, man. Like, if I think it was Michael Irvin that said years ago, like, if you don't like us celebrating, then don't let us score.
Preach.
You know, that's it at the end of the day.
I'm agreeing with the Dallas Cowboy. That's how bad it's gotten.
But yeah, that's it though. Like, you want there to be excitement and something to talk about in big moments. And, you know, grand slams are one of the few big things that can happen in baseball. It's pretty much like grand slams and no hitters, right?
Yeah.
So why not let somebody take a shot at one? And here's the weirder thing. I say weird. Maybe it's not weird. Maybe it makes sense that most of the people that are against it are the old guard. Yeah. The other young new fans and the players were all celebrating it. They thought it was cool.
Like you said, especially in a time when there's so much negative baseball news to report, why not? And again, Padres, let them be good for a little while.
Yeah. Like, this is that the Padres actually have the most, I mean, I don't think it's arguable to even say it, probably the most exciting player in baseball right now. And this is the news we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of saying, like, hey, he's the home run leader, he hit a grand slam this past week, like, this dude should be celebrated on a market that in a market that needs excitement for their baseball team. But, you know, because baseball is baseball, we're talking about the wrong thing.
Yeah, they actively try to destroy their game all the time.
Yep. It's to me, honestly, except for going to a live baseball game, if you're talking about viewing product, for my money, it's the fifth of the five major sports.
Oh, wow. So it's behind what? You put it behind soccer? We counting
soccer? Oh, absolutely putting it behind soccer.
With their 0-0 ties all the time?
Yeah, but at least action's happening during a soccer game. Like, I could get a no-hitter in baseball, and that is some of the most boring stuff to watch.
I love no-hitters, but then I'm, you know, I'm a boomer, I'll admit it.
My problem is, though, you still have people. You'll have the pitcher still taking forever between throws. You still have the batter stepping out of the batter's box for 20, 30 seconds between swings. And it's just like, what are we doing? You know, like, come on. Let's get up there. You had plenty of time to warm up in the on-deck circle. This dude's been warming up in the bullpen forever. Like, what are we even messing around with? Like, get up there.
It's baseball equivalent of your go.
Yeah, it is. Like, let's do it. You know, what are we doing?
Good game in between everything.
Because soccer, like, you still have a lot of near misses. You have maybe, you know, people took shots on goal a few times. Like, and then I will tell you this. If you go to a soccer game and you've been at a baseball game, dude, soccer games are lit. Like, for real. Like, even here, I've been to the Sounders games here. And I have literally watched sections just make noise, cheer, dance, sing, whatever, for the entire game. The only time they were quiet was at halftime. And I'm like, dude, these fans are fans.
And then that many times I'm sitting there trying to wonder what the excitement exactly is about. But yeah, fans are incredible.
Yeah, like, so I'm just saying, like, that helps the product a lot. And you just don't have that in baseball right now. I mean, if you even on TV, when you watch the stands, I mean, there's people half asleep, you know, in their seats. Like, that speaks to the speed of the sport and, you know, what's going on these days. Like, that's sad. But all right.
Oh, I saw the next topic. This is going to be great. I can't wait for this.
Oh, yeah, the next topic. Yeah, this is the one, like, what I would call most interesting news of the week that we were able to talk about. So it turns out, for whatever reason, Parade Magazine, I'm assuming they still have a magazine, put out on their website an article that was We Play Games, the Games We Play, 25 online games that women enjoy. Then it was retweeted by E3, and then the internet went bananas, and they eventually deleted it. So you can only find it as an archived page at this point. But my problem with it, like, okay, first off, let me say, I think, and this is me just guessing, because I can't imagine, I don't know, maybe the people are this brain dead, but it feels like the intention was, all right, let's show that there are plenty of games that women are playing. However, it did not come off like that at all. Like, because it feels like they probably did some small survey, whether it was like people in their office or through their network or whatever. And, you know, they compiled the results and then made this article. And it's, you know, it starts out being real written. You know, it gives you the stats of less like, you know, of the 214 million players in the world, 41% are women. You know, gives that whole thing, right? And then the first game on their list, Sudoku. Like, really? Really? Like, I told you off there, if I was an editor and you brought me this article and I'm like, wait, we're wasting 100 words that I'm supposed to pay you for to tell somebody about Sudoku?
You did say Parade magazine, though, which probably tells us a lot of what we need to know about where this came from. I just like know the average age of the staffer at Parade magazine.
I don't know, man. But I'm like, dude, just get out of here with that. Like, and even then, like, because I could, like, going down the list, right? There's one called Sayonara Wild Hearts. Don't even know what it is. Haven't played it. Can't really speak on it. Apparently, it's a thing you can download on, like, Switch, Xbox One, all that. And then it's like Candy Crush. Like, everybody freaking plays Candy Crush. Yeah. Like, this isn't, there's nothing even interesting that you're going to be able to tell people about this game. Right? Now, it's like Harry Potter Wizards Unite. Okay. That's like Harry Potter meets Pokemon Go, I think. Right? That's kind of cool. A little bit different. People may not even know it's a thing. Harry Potter's still really popular. Okay. Go ahead and include it. Like, Animal Crossing, literally everybody and their mom who had a damn Nintendo Switch during COVID, whatever, is playing Animal Crossing.
Switch, GameCube, Animal Crossing has been a thing for about, what, three straight Nintendo consoles, I think.
Yeah, that's, you know, whatever. Overwatch, now there's one you can have a real conversation about, right? But the problem is, they didn't, honestly, this should have been like a two-paragraph section to talk about the diversity of characters, all the different women that you can play in the game. You know, like, there's some, like, the real reason there's draw, and this isn't, like, a misogynistic, whatever, generic first-person shooter.
This is probably one of, you know, 9 or 10 gaming articles they'll do this year. I don't know. It just has that feel to me where this.
But, yeah, my problem is just, like, the reason you should be writing this article is for an opportunity like that. To tell people that, like, hey, you may have heard about Overwatch and may not realize that a bunch of women play this game. And here's why, right? And then you can talk about the characters and whatever. And, like, okay, now women who are reading the article might be like, oh, well, I didn't know that. Let me go check it out.
I feel like I know what they were trying to do. They just did not stick the landing in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. Because you know what's next on the list? Solitaire.
Oh, dear.
Like, who, again... Why, like, is an editor even paying somebody to tell people about Solitaire? The damn thing's freeware on Windows.
Like, this reminds me of, I guess, a couple of months ago when they had Mrs. Monopoly and the internet reacted the same way.
Yeah, that was pretty dumb, too. So then going down the list, you got Sims 4. Fine, worth telling people about. Cool. You've got Stardew Valley. Another cool game people may not know about, whatever, feel free to talk about it. There's Spelunky. I don't even know what that is, but it says it's an old school platformer. So I'm like, neat. Maybe it's something worth checking out. And then Bejeweled Classic. Like, again, why? Like, this is the thing. There's just so much wasted space in this article. Like, if they had a goal, you're just filling it with junk that's not even, like, giving you the opportunity to meet your goal.
The way I've seen an article like this done better is something along the lines of, hey, here's some games, you know, that your partner that's not necessarily a gamer might enjoy.
Yeah, that would be fine. Or, hey, the most popular games, you know, of the popular games, here are ones that, like, women have approved of or whatever around our office. You know, like, whatever it is. Right, you could have put a spin on it that made sense and would be appealing.
Or if they had actually, I hadn't seen the article. If they have the whichever writer picked this, explain why they like it. That would have been.
Yeah, that would have been good too. Like, maybe you list out some games, and then the women in the office come on and say like pros and cons of each game for them. Right.
That way we know actual women were consulted, because at this point I don't feel like I'm convinced of that.
Well, yeah. But here's the problem. If I go down the list, a big handful of these are just more than a handful, probably like 8 or 9 of them on here, are just apps and phone games.
Yeah.
Like Casino World, Heyday, you know, whatever. Like, why are these even in the article? Like, sure, those are games and those are legit, but like the point of an article like this should be that women play all of these other serious games too. And so highlight those and explain why. But yeah, it's just...
And again, it would have been a great chance to actually put some of the women in your office front and center and have them explain why they like a certain game. Else it feels just like, hey, okay, some guy told some women to go play some games, and this is what resulted.
Yeah, it's just... I don't know. It just felt bad.
Like, at least they try. They get the Bart Simpson. At least you try.
Yeah. And again, like I said, I feel like just glancing over it, like I kind of feel like I get where you were trying to go. But man, this was so poorly thought out and just wasted space. Because really, if you read this, it's like a handful of popular games that everybody already knows about or plays, that literally everyone plays, which by their own definition to start the thing is like 41% of the people that play are women anyway. Well, if it's a huge game, yes, there are going to be some women that play already. And then you have another big section that are just downloadable apps effectively, or Facebook games. And then there's like a handful that are actually like real games that people may have heard about but didn't realize there was a big female portion of the population. But I just feel like this article could have been so much more. Like, it really could have been. And I don't know, I do think some people who are complaining about it took a little bit out of context. But really, they kind of also did that damage to themselves by just... It was kind of like a half-done effort, really. Like, you can go through, and it's just like, all right, well, I see these apps, and I see the price I can download them for. Well, let me make sure I put that in the article or whatever. So there's a bunch of stuff that mentions, like, the App Store, Google Play Store, you know, whatever, on a bunch of the stuff. And it's like, okay, that's great, but you only gave me like 2 sentences about the actual game.
Yeah.
So yeah, it didn't do much to promote the games. It didn't do much to really promote the gaming industry. Didn't do much to tell people about the women's interest in a game and why. Like, it just, everything it could have done, it just missed. But if you see news around or see people complaining about it on Twitter or on Facebook or anywhere else on social media, that's why. Because there was just, for lack of a better word, a half-ass effort made on an article to try to, I don't know, ingratiate their female readers into gaming or something. I don't know what they were trying to do. But let's talk about some other news. Double Masters came out, and some good, some bad with it. You know, I think the Double Masters VIP thing didn't really matter much. I mean, people who wanted it bought it. Most retailers I know were sold out. So for people that complain about, you know, $100 booster, blah, blah, blah. Like, people bought it.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, they probably did it correctly. They didn't overprint it. They made a modest amount. So it still has collectability and there's still some interest there. All right, cool. Nothing wrong with that. If people who have the money want to spend it, but you can still get the regular versions and other stuff, I'm totally down with it. I don't have a big problem with it.
So you're not in on the class action lawsuit that I hear is brewing for the fault advertising?
Let's be real. There was another one of those types of issues like 4 years ago, and nothing ever came of it. Like, especially right now, I think they're going to be able to, because the problem is you have to prove purposeful negligence. And it's very possible, just like with all the stuff going on back and forth and all the different communications they have to have right now with nobody working in the office and whatnot, one team just posted the wrong info. I mean, what are you really going to do? And at the end of the day, when the news came out, a bunch of people still could have canceled their orders. To my knowledge, I don't know of anything that was non-refundable at any point before something shipped. So I'm not really sure what the issue was, But I mean, don't get me wrong. Would you like to have as much information as possible that's correct whenever you go to order something? Absolutely. But this doesn't feel like it was purposeful or I don't know. It didn't feel like it was being like, I don't know. I feel like process negligence probably, but I don't feel that it was just like purposely trying to get over on somebody and become this like money grab or whatever.
Did you end up buying any of the VIP packs or?
I did not. I think I want to get one or two just for opening for like video purposes and stuff. So
I was thinking the same thing. Like if I was going to do it, that'd be the main reason just to open it on stream and see if I get anything interesting.
Yeah. I think the problem is some people, you know, because they ended up being kind of rare, some people wanted a little more for them or whatever. Some people paid the higher price and then were upset. They opened value less than $100. But
it has always been the way booster packs have worked for the most part. You just paid $104 for this one.
Like they may average out to be fine, but the truth is there's really two issues. If everything in a booster was worth more than $100, then people would either open them and sell singles or they're going to sell the boosters for more than $100. I mean, that's just kind of the way it works. The other issue is as more of those cards come out and more of them get opened, then the average price of a lot of those things is going to come down because the desirability becomes lower because people already can get them or get different versions of them or whatever. I mean, it was cool. The set has a lot of stuff that was like reprinted for the first time, stuff that was foil for the first time, new art, you know, things like that. It's still going to keep people interested. But the cool part is overall prices did come down on a lot of this stuff. But what we did see in the same window is a lot of stuff that was on the reserve list or not being reprinted in a lot of these products also took a big jump as well. So it's kind of two sides of a thing here. You know, stuff that's eligible to be reprinted took a big hit because, you know, we've had a lot of reprints this year and a bunch of them in double masters. But then the stuff that's not eligible to be reprinted went significantly higher because I guess people got reminded that like, oh yeah, this isn't going to be reprinted. And now that people are getting more of the stuff they wanted to be able to build their next commander decks and stuff, well, now when they go look for those other cards are now more expensive because more people need them again. So it's always interesting how that works out. The secondary market's very interesting, very strange, how that all plays whenever you get big reprint sets. But overall, I have to say, if we're judging a set just on one, meeting the goal of sales and seeing how much of it is sold out everywhere with retailers, have to call that a success. And then the fact that it did drive down a lot of the prices of cards that were reprinted in there. So
that's like retailer win, consumer win. So
yeah, that sounds good for us as players, right? We can build more decks or get the cards we want to finish off our decks cheaper. And that's kind of what people want when stuff gets reprinted. The only thing I will add to this is this led to speculation on fetch lands again. And not to talk about other people's content, but there is a certain person who people will probably know who put up a video basically speculating that the fetch lands will be in the ancillary slot in the, what are we calling them? The set boosters for Zendikar. However, I'm pretty sure I saw already that Wizard said specifically in their article that that is not where fetch lands will appear. So make of that what you will. Use that information where you will, but I just wanted to point that out for people. I'm still of the belief we're going to see the fetch lands toward the end of the year as a marketing promotion, personally. I still think that's the best use of it, but I'm not there anymore, so we'll see what happens. Then we had some other news that was pretty interesting, which this is one you actually told me about. I didn't see this. It kind of snuck in under the radar this week. That Spell Table got sold to Wizards of the Coast. And actually, I don't know, Brian, what do you think about this one? Because I know, you know, there's some people who are always like conspiracy theory about when Wizards goes and buys a company.
Yeah, people, you know, have been for years saying, I guess, that, oh, well, this is Wizards' grand plan is to kill paper magic. And to me, this seems like the complete opposite of that. They just, I'm sure some theorists will say, oh, they did this so they could shut down all the ways you could play paper Magic, which still sounds crazy to me. But to me, you look at this, you look at Double Masters, they're clearly trying to figure out ways to keep the product going in a time when it'd be very easy to walk away from it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat you are here.
COVID-19 is a perfect excuse to where like, oh, well, you know, it's just not worth the money to keep printing paper Magic cards. If that's what you wanted to do, you got the perfect excuse to do it right now, and they're not doing it. What they're doing, yeah, especially with Double Masters, is they're showing that they're trying to see exactly how much money we're willing to pay for paper Magic cards, and that price for a lot of people goes up to $100 a pack. So, hey, that's...
I'm with you. You know, I've been saying this for a while, right? If you honestly believe Wizards was trying to kill paper, now would have been the easiest time to do it. Where you get to say, you know what? It's just too much hassle. People aren't able to go to their local game stores, at least in the US and Mexico or whatever right now. But you just wouldn't do anything, right? You just tell these retailers, like, sorry, we got nothing for you. You know, but when they're printing free cards for them to be able to sell and keep the doors open, when they're making special promos just to encourage purchases and sales or whatever, you know, they're still working on new software and doing updates to it. So when people get back to playing physical paper tournaments again, you know, they're buying spell tables so they can do online things with physical cards. Like, these are all actions that say they still want to keep paper around. They still want to keep the hobby retailers around.
Because from a corporate standpoint, this is an industry where actual pieces of cardboard can go from, you know, can get to where they're worth thousands of dollars. Why, as a company, would you ever voluntarily leave such an industry? You wouldn't.
No. I mean, here's the other thing. It's like I said before. If you are Wizards corporate heads and you have to go before Hasbro, or hell, even Hasbro, just to talk to their shareholders and say, okay, and again, I'm just making up a number here, but let's say paper Magic is worth $500 million this year. And even let's say digital Magic goes bananas and it's worth $1 billion. So we're saying it's worth twice as much as paper Magic. Are you going to honestly go to your shareholders or your company heads or whatever and say, you know what, we're just going to get rid of $500 million on our budget? Like, on our balance sheets, we're just going to take away $500 million that we could make. No, nobody's going to do that. Like, you're not turning away much profit.
Why would you ever?
Yeah, you just wouldn't, right? So, every time somebody says that, I always tell them, like, the only two ways that can happen is either there has to be something else that comes along that's way less effort that they're producing that makes as much money, or digital literally has to become like five times bigger than paper. So you can justify sending all your resources at that instead of at paper. Like, that's literally the only scenarios, because nothing else makes sense. Like, a company's not going to let go of literally hundreds of millions of dollars.
By the way, if you're a good player, you can play digital Magic for free. You never have to ever give them a penny.
Sure.
You can't do that with paper. You got to at least invest enough money to buy your first deck of cards.
Yeah, so it's all very interesting. You know, I think a lot of people that talk about it killing paper are, one, just speaking and repeating rhetoric more than anything else, or they just believe it but don't have good logic as to why they believe it. Because, honestly, one of the other content creators had posted about a month ago at this point, I think, that with the Hasbro quarterly reports or whatever coming out, they were concerned because sales for paper Magic had dropped and the numbers for, I think, like, digital had only gone up 11%. So they were just like, oh man, that means people are quitting Magic, but they're not turning to digital. And I was like, well, no, that's not necessarily what that means at all, right? Like, paper is down, but we don't necessarily know how much. The other thing is, some of it's just because of logistical chain where they haven't been able to produce enough to sell some things. Yeah. Because right
some
now, there's a bunch of...
lost their jobs and not be able to afford their Magic cards right now.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of retailers right now that if they could get extra Commander decks and stuff for Ikoria and whatnot, they would take it and sell them in a heartbeat. Like, there's just some products they can't get enough of right now. Hell, right now, some of them are out of Jumpstart. Some of them are out of Double Masters, you know. So that contributes to it, too. It's not that necessarily people aren't buying paper or don't want to. It's just like maybe there's not enough in the supply chain.
Now, what I'll grant you that we may see is we may see casual start take up a much larger percentage of the pie.
Yeah, but it already does. The other thing, too, is 11%, we don't know what that means. Like, I have to go look at the numbers, but 11% could be a huge increase for digital magic. You know, I don't know. Like, I mean, if you're talking about, I'm just making a number, but maybe it's $100 million. Well, that means they made $10 million extra last quarter, year over year. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Any company that has, honestly, if you get like 3-4% growth year over year, you're excited when you're talking big numbers. So 11% is a big number.
And if you're growing now during the pandemic, when bottoms are falling out of the American economy.
For sure. For sure. So, yeah, I think as a whole, Magic is still trending up. I think we still see the numbers when we see all the growth on people's social media, when we see it on the YouTube channels, when we see more people coming and watching Twitch streams. You know, I'm seeing a lot of growth for different people. So I think the interest is there. I think Paper Magic's still going to be around. I honestly think Spell Table being purchased says that somebody at Wizards at least is realizing, hey, we could use this for things. Because, you know, think about it. Like, when they do charity events, which they do every year, you know, and they have people on playing Magic, like, you have to set up all these individual webcams and you have to do all these feeds. And it's like, well, what if we just bought Spell Table? And that just makes our lives easier. You know what I mean? Because honestly, Spell Table wasn't that big. I mean, it probably didn't cost all that much to buy it. And it's probably, there's sometimes it is cheaper for a company to just buy another company and their infrastructure than it is to try to research it and build it.
Yeah, they've already built the brand. You don't have to do that work.
Yeah. Like, sure, maybe could they have built the same infrastructure for like half the cost they bought Spell Table for? Sure. But then you have to now go train everybody to use yours instead of using Spell Table. And, you know, whatever other plans they already had, you now get to be part of that instead of having to build those new relationships. So, like, I get why it happened. It makes sense. The other cool thing, too, I will say, in their release, they actually, and this is the people at Spell Table, they refunded everybody's Patreon for the last month, which is pretty cool. Yeah, because they didn't have to. You know, I think you and I both would have been fine. Like, if we support them, we just say, cool, you keep it. That was part of your journey. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But that's cool. They went, you know what? We don't need it anymore. We got a big deal from Wizards. Have your money back. So that's pretty awesome.
But Aetna didn't send me any discounts on my insurance.
Yeah, that's for sure. So yeah, so that's pretty neat. I think overall, it's a good deal for people. I think it'd be interesting. We just wait and see what Wizards plans to do with Spell Table. But honestly, I'm not sure there's any major plans. I think it's just smart as a company to have one more tool in your pocket that you can use. And then maybe down the road, if you start doing some fun things, maybe in markets where there's not a bunch of stores or something, or you're going into new markets that maybe haven't developed yet, maybe you can do some online things where you're doing paper tournaments online using Spell Table. You know, who knows? Another interesting thing that did happen with online Magic is they introduced the standard 2021 format. So basically, this is what standard will look like come, I guess, mid-September, minus Zendikar. And it's kind of interesting, you know, because you don't have to deal with stuff like Nissa, obviously isn't around anymore. A couple of the other planeswalkers you get used to seeing are gone. You know, all the War of the Spark stuff, so like no Narsets and things. Some of the decks you're used to playing lose some of your favorite, like, you know, me being the Gruul player, I don't get to use Gruul Spellbreaker anymore. So that's a thing.
Paradise Druid.
Yeah, Paradise Druid's another good one. But there's a lot of good cards still around. And it's interesting because you're getting to see, like, okay, there are some themes that really didn't get explored. I think, like, yesterday I put up a Rakdos Menace-themed deck. Because, you know, we saw a lot of cards with Menace come out in Ikoria, but they never really got time anywhere. So nobody knows if they're any good or not. So I was like, you know what? Let's just build a deck and see if it's possible. And it's been pretty fun, I have to admit. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, putting time and building decks and doing stuff for a thing that's only going to be around for like a month. But there's a fair amount of people playing it, and they're responding really positively to the content that's online. So I'm really surprised. Like, it's actually working out really well. People seem to enjoy it. I've played a couple of games, and, you know, beyond what I've played for actual content creation. And it's kind of fun. I mean, obviously, these decks are all going to change when Zendikar comes out, whether cards get added to them or, I don't know, they become no good because of some new mechanic in Zendikar or something. But I think it's a good change of pace for the last month into rotation. Question, though, is for a lot of people is like, how are they using it? You know, because one of the things I asked a lot of my viewers is, you know, the ones that were interested, why were they interested in the format? And you have some people that are fairly new. They want to be able to play something. They want to spend some wild cards to build better decks, but they don't necessarily want to spend them on something that's not going to be legal here in about a month, right? Because that's resources that they're not getting back. There's some people that do truly just want a change of pace. There's some people that have favorite cards or cards they're interested in that they want to see get some playtime that aren't because the formats always kind of push them out. Now is a chance they could play with those cards. So we're getting to see a lot about the future format before it's here. And I know they did this last year, but I think the difference is this year, it felt like there were so many powerful cards or so many cards that were like oppressive to the format that people are just ready for the change. And I think this was very positive to kind of break that up a little bit. So yeah, with all that being said, Brian, like, what do you think as far as like people like struggling maybe with resources or maybe just wanting something different, you know, or anyway, just like your perspective in general and the whole like standard 2021 format?
I think this is a good way to, you know, go in there, test out some stuff. Like you said, you know, hey, you don't, I know one of the things I struggle with is, okay, when the new set comes out, well, which things am I going to craft? Which things, you know, are trap cards? Which things look good but aren't going to really turn out to be good? This is a good way to figure that out.
That's actually a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. Like, there are times that, for me, it was like, I think when the last set came out, maybe it was like Song of Creation. You know, I think I tried that in a couple of decks and went, man, this is just not that good.
Azusa, yeah. Lost But Seeking was my, oh, it looks so good. And then it turned out to be largely useless.
Yeah, and I think those are maybe the spots where this is the time to do that exploration. Or even for people like me to make content so other people can see maybe this is a thing I want to build or not. And now you can start working toward that, right? Like, you can start now and then maybe leave yourself, like, let's say, 8 to 10 rare wild cards and 4 to 8 mythic wild cards. You can just build whatever you want right out of the gate or get the last few cards you need to finish off your deck. And that's not a bad thing. I think it's cool that it's an option. You know, I don't think it's something we've been able to do in the past. I mean, we did it this set and then for last fall, but I think it's a good thing to have in kind of the annual rotation.
And this is the best time to try it when we've had this bizarre situation where they just went ahead and banned a bunch of problematic cards way before they would have ordinarily.
Yeah, that's also true. I mean, you're coming off a big banning. The format's already being shaken up, so people are wanting to look at other cards and try other things. And this is, I don't know, maybe it just feels like more of just a safe spot to do that. You know, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if people haven't checked it out, you know, give it a look. It's a pretty fun format. I've been kind of surprised by it. I wasn't sure how much content I was going to make for it, but there's obviously enough people who are interested. So I'm at least doing that for all of this week on my YouTube channel, and maybe we'll see how next week goes. I have a few deck lists in the hopper, so maybe we'll try some new things and put stuff out there. Want to give a quick event update. The Command Fest Online 2 is happening this weekend on August 22nd and 23rd. Yours truly will be playing on Sunday morning, the 23rd, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So I'll be playing some Commander, probably getting my face smashed in, but, you know, it'll be fun. And then after that, I'll be doing some commentary for the Mythic Society on their Twitch channel. So you can catch me there. I'm going to be busy on Sunday. Matter of fact, I'm literally getting done with the Command Fest thing, hopping over, logging in, and 30 minutes later, I'll be doing commentary. So it's going to be a quick turnaround for
me. The Iron Man of Magic, folks. The hardest working man in Magic the Gathering, Daquan Watson.
Hey, I'm doing what I can do, man. Then the Backsplash, which we talked about last week with JD Greenidge. That event's going to be happening the following weekend on August 29th, and I believe it had a noon start time. And then let me go double check. I don't want to lie to the public here and give the wrong times for that. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on August 29th. So, and you can check that out on Twitch on JD Greenidge's channel. It's just JD Greenidge. So you can go over, like his channel, and you know, hit the little notification bell. So when it's live, you'll get notified. And that brings us to the dinner table. But today's conversation isn't so deep as much as it is just like an observation, and I don't know. Retrospective really isn't the word, but more just talking about, you know, how tournaments have changed as far as accessibility right now in the time of COVID. You know, because all the tournaments right now, really all the major tournaments are online, right? You don't even have like locals. Yeah, that's not true. There's a few people I've seen that are starting to get to go to their local stores again, but you don't have like your regular FNMs, your regular Saturday tournaments. We definitely don't have Grand Prix, your Star City Opens, you know, all the stuff is online. And the interesting thing is I started thinking about like how many people have access to participate in these events now that didn't necessarily have that before. Like, if you lived in the boonies somewhere,
yeah,
you might, I mean, or I don't know, some just rural anywhere, and maybe the closest event might have been a 3 to 4, maybe 6 hour drive. So it just may not be reasonable to do it. But when you can wake up and walk from your bed to your computer and play for 3 hours, 4 hours, that's pretty cool.
Or like you've talked about, like maybe you live, you know, out in the sticks and you're a person of color and the nearest town is someplace you don't really care to be after nightfall.
Yeah, that's the thing that's happened. Hey, here's the other thing too, right? Let's say you have some type of disability. Maybe you're wheelchair bound or, I don't know, maybe even social anxiety or whatever, right? Now you don't have to worry about navigating all those things and all the inconveniences of like loading up, driving to the event, finding space, making sure the place is ADA compliant, all that, right? Like you can just play now.
If you're female and people are being, you know, jerk faces when you go into a comic shop.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real thing, right? So like, and I don't know how many people are going to play and just stay online or how many people are going to play and then maybe transition to paper. I mean, historically in the game business, we have seen that when there is a digital version or a mobile app or something of a product, it does encourage sales of the physical product as well. That's something we've seen historically, even with board games and things of that nature. So some number of that will also transition to paper for Magic, I'm pretty sure.
That's actually my story. What really got me into it after, you know, seeing lots of other people play it was Duels of the Planeswalkers came out on my Xbox.
Okay.
And I really sat down, got into it, and convinced myself I could play this game, and then went to the comic shop and found out otherwise, but I was hooked at that point.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things people don't know. Like, the highest time or the largest number of DCI numbers, events, whatever, were at the peak of Duels of the Planeswalkers. Like, you had a lot of people register, and a bunch of new faces came into the game because of that product. So I think a lot of that's going to happen with Arena as well, because you're going to have this situation where a bunch of people are playing on Arena, but some of them are doing it just out of necessity because they can't go do anything else physically. But once we start opening up stores again, start opening up big events again, granted, you know, it still may be 6, 9, 12 months, who knows? But once it happens, now these people will venture out and participate in the other things. The interesting thing will be just, you know, do all events get bigger as everybody's back to hanging out, spending money, socializing with Magic, sharing their stories? Does one become bigger than the other for a competitive play? Does one become only a casual environment? Like, who knows? But I think it's interesting to just think about how things have changed. You know, even something like MTG Melee has made it now where they can do push notifications to whatever, like, email or phone whenever your round's up. Like, Wizards is working on new software as well for that. You've got, you know, you can link all your different social media stuff to it as well, so it's easy to share all your things. Like, there's a lot of cool things that are coming out of this.
And, you know, we saw a couple of weeks ago with the Crokies versus the Paper Boomers, where there's what I hope is still a friendly rivalry, you know, between people that play digitally and people that play paper Magic. And that was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's something else that's happened that wouldn't if we weren't in this COVID state, I'm pretty sure. So it's kind of interesting, right? Because we look at the pandemic and think about, like, we talk a lot about all the negatives that have come out of it. Because there are a lot, you know, people getting sick, people dying, business changing, people losing their jobs. But the other side of that is we've moved to a world now where, like, because I was thinking about this the other day, right? Let's say, how many people do you think were turned down for jobs because they had a disability that would make commuting back and forth difficult for them? But now you have a lot of these companies that are moving to remote jobs of one kind or another.
That's one of the things we learned. So many jobs that companies said couldn't be done at home now are obviously being done at home and will probably be that way even after the pandemic is over, because it's just easier for the company.
Yeah, one of the interesting things here is in a town east of Seattle here, one of the big outdoor outfitters, REI, they were setting up this giant campus. Like, basically, they were building a corporate summer camp, effectively. I mean, it had, like, big garage doors. You can have the outdoor lighting and air come in. They had, like, fire pits, like, all this stuff, right? And it was supposed to open later this year. And they're deciding they may not even use it. You know, even after spending it and it's almost done, they're thinking about just selling it and moving a lot of those corporate jobs that were going to be there, those HQ jobs, to just being remote. You know, because even they were saying, like, you know, okay, well, if we can cut this many expenses and we can just get ahead of this, then, like, maybe when something like this happens again, we'll just use our other offices we already have and it's all good. But think about anybody who may have previously been turned down for one of those positions because they weren't going to be able to commute back and forth to an office. And those are high-paying positions. So now people are going to be eligible to get those jobs, which is pretty cool. Because, you know, things happen. Either, you know, maybe mentally something goes down and maybe, I don't know, stressors or trauma or whatever. Or physically, maybe you've gotten into an accident or something and now some things just aren't as easy for you. Like, this makes that a non-issue. And the same thing applies to our gaming and to Magic or whatever, right? Like we're saying, it could be difficult getting to and from tournaments sometimes, or navigating the crowds, or honestly, just not even having to deal with people giving you crap or looking at you funny or whatever it is. Like, this is another option for those people that didn't really exist before.
And Wizards said, you know, a lot of the reason for the ban, especially Cauldron Familiar, is because these were cards that just were not fun to interact with online. Cauldron Familiar especially caused so many triggers that it was just annoying to watch, annoying to play against.
Yeah, and that does speak to the point too of just making a nicer environment. So, I mean, now granted, does the trend stay once we move forward? You know, we are humans with short memories, especially here in the US. So once everything's better, are we going to treat it the same way and moving forward? Like, I don't know. I would like to think a lot of the companies, you know, especially when you understand their balance sheets taking a hit for various reasons, I think they would stay aware of this type of thing and that it could happen in the future. But I can say I've looked around and seen more people posting more things for remote work that they wouldn't before. You know, especially stuff when you're talking about, like, advertising jobs, communication stuff, whatever. They like you to be in-house, but now they're just like, nope, you can work remote. You know, and the other thing is, too, the money's not any different. So you get to save all that money on, like, the wear and tear on your car, replacing your tires, the oil changes, the gas, or your bus tickets or whatever. Like, that's awesome. But yeah, I think tournament accessibility, I think, is a big thing right now. And I think there is going to be some significant amount of growth to physical events. Now, granted, this is once everybody's comfortable going back out, because I'm sure the first couple that happen, there'll be some people that are like, let me wait and see how this goes first. And then maybe I'll go to like the third one or the fourth one. You know what I mean?
And that's perfectly understandable.
Yeah, because being real, like, I definitely want to go back and socialize and play some like physical paper competitive games. But at the same time, like, if there was a Grand Prix in our backyard, I'd be like, let me check everybody's behavior. Let me see how many people get sick from this one, you know, whatever. All right, looks fine. Maybe I'll go to the second or third one.
I'm gonna try to go to the first one, and Mrs. Allen's gonna tackle me. You're like, no, you stay in here.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? And that may be the case for a lot of people. But I think once we get beyond that point, I think that's when we'll start seeing like higher attendance numbers. I honestly think this time right now, while people, like, granted, we're not getting to engage in the way we're used to, as far as being social around a table, joking with each other, making fun of each other, you know, high-fiving and all that. But we are consuming a lot of Magic content right now.
And we appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah, for real. And we've seen a lot of people still buying cards. You know, we see prices on some stuff going up. We do see retailers running out of products. So people do have cards they want to play with. So it's not like people quit buying. It's not like people started playing Arena and said, oh, I'll just do this and I'll never play physical paper Magic, right? When people talk about, like, why do they still show all these paper tournaments online? Why do they do, you know, big events in paper? Because it still drives sales.
Yeah. And once you play something and you see a good sale, that's how the Steam sale works. How many Steam games have you bought that you've never opened, but you saw a good sale?
Yeah, that's for real. So, yeah, I think this is going to lead to us, like, all this accessibility that's being around. And there's events literally every day. Like, they're doing the Star City Open qualifiers every day. You can go on and look at MTG Melee, and people are scheduling tournaments you can play all the time. Some different content creators are running their own tournament series. So those are things that are happening now. It's like everybody's just doing stuff to keep active right now. And that's more engagement than we've ever had on a daily basis for Magic. So I think moving forward, some of this is going to carry over. And I think despite all the stuff that's happened with COVID and, you know, kind of scaring ourselves for good reason, don't get me wrong, but, you know, people are going to be a little wary. But I think once you get past those first couple of events, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing, I don't know if I'd say record numbers, but we're going to see some pretty big numbers.
Yeah, because I know we're going to appreciate it so much more, because whoever thought Friday Night Magic as we knew it could go away? Nobody thought.
Yeah. I mean, you had Friday Night Magic just as it was for, like, gosh, I don't know, 15, 18 years. Yeah. And then here we are where it was taken away basically for 6 months. And by the time it gets back to normal, it'll probably be 9 or 12 months. So that's definitely a whole different thing. I mean, it does give you a different perspective. And I think
I'm going to have some tears for the video of my man probably after all of this.
Some people might, you know, there will be some people that I'm sure I haven't seen in forever that you're going to want to give them a strong hug or a handshake or whatever. I know it's sure probably not good protocol post COVID, but, you know, people are going to want to, because you're going to be people you haven't seen in forever that you used to see all the time.
We'll look at your tests and Daquan's spreadsheet, you know.
Yep. Hey, you laugh, but that's real. Speaking of, I want to include one last thing, though, here is that if you are curious about COVID, I would check your local areas, because I know around us, they have gotten to the point that Kaiser, I believe, here is one of the places, but I know other places are doing it too, where you can go in and just get tested next to free, and it's quick. You know, they're doing turnarounds where recently I had a couple of people who went and did it, and they said 12 hours they had results. So if you're curious, or if you've been around some people you think might have been exposed, or just, I don't know, maybe you're thinking about engaging in public activity again or visiting somebody and you just want to make sure you're not bringing something to them, check with your insurance provider, check with your local clinics. There's a lot of state offered stuff right now that's making it easier for people to be tested right now. So be sure to do that. Check it out. It's one way to make sure we're not spreading stuff around and just keeping everybody safe. And on that note, Brian, why don't we go ahead and tell everybody how they can find you on social media?
All right. I am DL Caesar on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter. Our family channel on YouTube is Allen's Ever After.
And congratulations, by the way, that your home tour videos are actually starting to get a lot of traction over there.
Oh, thank you. People love looking at house tours. So if that's something you're into, by all means, stop by, check out the new digs.
And as usual, you can find me at Power Dragon, PowerDragn on most social platforms. You can find me streaming on Twitch on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight, and on YouTube just about every day. Sometimes, actually, this week was twice. This week, I had two videos go up on the same day. So lots of content if you want to find us. But as usual, wherever you are listening from, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And just wear your mask, keep your distance, stay away from other humans because everybody's icky with the COVID right now. And let's just get everybody better so we can get back to our more normal state of gaming. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.